All right, welcome back, everyone. Hopefully everyone has a great start to their week, and we just appreciate you joining us for another episode of The Language of Behavior. I have my courageous guest host, Charlie Peck, with me, and I just appreciate you joining also, Charlie.
I'm so glad to be here, Josh. We have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, and the reason I use that adjective, courageous, is because you've joined me for 25 episodes.
What? How did that happen? Josh, I am honestly just so grateful to do this with you. I don't know how I would get through all of these questions that people throw at us because it's really important stuff, but I'm just grateful to be here.
I feel the exact same way and just feel very blessed to do all these different projects. In addition to the fact that we've got another webinar coming up, I wanted to throw that out for folks, and I'm going to put the link up for those who are watching on YouTube, but I know that with Thriving Educator Premium, there's a lot of content that's being created and being put out there for folks to watch or to consume. So will you just share a little bit about the June 30th free webinar for everyone?
Yeah. So we want to always make sure that people are getting what they need in education. And so this is for education leaders. And listen, if you're a rock star teacher, you're an education leader, you're a school leader, school counselors. Lots of different people coming into this stuff. So this one is about student behavior response. I know it's a hot topic, especially in June when you're out of the thick of things and you really need to just refresh, but you're thinking, what am I doing next year? It's going to come up in a month or so. I need to really start thinking. So it's interactive. It's about the student behavior response, having practical tools and strategies to level up your plan. That's what we're doing. So it's Monday, June 30th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Very cool. Can't wait for that. And if you haven't joined one of the webinars, make sure you do that. There's a ton of content, resources, things that you're going to be able to get. And then also, you know, if you're consuming this podcast and you want others on your campus or maybe some friends to join in, make sure you're sharing that link in this episode out so folks can take advantage of this free resource. If you're ready, we'll go ahead and jump into the question for this week.
Let's do it.
All right. So we've got Lindsay Ward, who provided a question for us. So she asks, when students manipulate situations and other teachers for certain things, what strategies do you have to use to still feel like you are supporting the student?
Wow. That's a big question, isn't it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that word manipulation. How do you see that word manipulation? Let's start there.
Trying to get your way. Yeah.
And using like whatever tactics you can to kind of get what you want. All right. So from my teacher point of view, I remember feeling that was so frustrating. But when I became a therapist, I really started understanding manipulation is a tricky word. It's kind of like a skillful way of trying to get your needs met. That's how I see it. We're kind of misguiding the kid when we're not seeing it like that. And we label them as manipulative. So I'm not saying it's not a thing because it is, but if we can reframe it, then it will help us see it a little differently. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, it's that underlying thing that is under the behavior. I mean, that's what we talk about on this podcast. So to dissect it, I mean, obviously there's something more going on with that student. And usually it's with unhealthy relationships and trying to get an unmet need, like you were saying. And so a lot of times it's having to, as the adult, model the appropriate way to handle that and to address it. And we've talked about this before too, of still being firm, but allowing them to understand that there are expectations, and in a healthy relationship, we don't do that with each other, and calling it out, and but also showing them the appropriate way moving forward.
Yeah. And that does make it skill-based. I mean, if we can look at it like, hey, listen, this kid just needs some skills around this. And by the way, at the same time, I need to set boundaries around this. I need to know my own limitations so that I can teach them that. Because we can't expect people to respond to our boundaries. Like, they're not going to, typically. And so we need to know our own limits and be able to respect our own limits there. And that's one thing that's key too. And so if people are manipulating us, it's because we're not firm with our own kind of beliefs of what we're going to involve ourselves in. And a lot of times that comes with confidence and just knowing who we are and what we're willing to take and not take. It can be that simple. Now, when the kid is being manipulative, we need to just recognize it as like a coping mechanism. So let's look underneath it. What's going on? Again, get curious, ask very brief, easy questions about it. So if you just go back to what need is this behavior, the manipulation is behavior, trying to meet, then we can just shift it to reduce our frustration and promote more connection, because we'll be more compassionate and get back into our teaching mode. Like, how do we guide them through this if we do that? That's how I see it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, sometimes it's about our own control and what we are able to change. I can think of plenty of times. So like when I was a teacher, I had these plastic hunting ducks that I use for passes for a couple of reasons. One, it was fun. And I actually painted them as Superman and Batman. So they were kind of fun for the kids, but then also it allowed other teachers to see, like, if a kid's somewhere they're not supposed to and they have a Superman duck, they know exactly what classroom they belong to, right? So there was kind of twofold there. But at the same time, it was very loose as far as the kids would just grab the duck and just walk out of the classroom. And so for myself as an early teacher, although I had good intent, procedures allowed for students to manipulate the system. And so for me, I had to like kind of pull it back several times throughout the year to kind of make it so that it was constructed a little more tight. And I knew exactly which child was leaving the classroom at what time and they're coming back. So I had a record, because, you know, if a bathroom got vandalized and one of my kids did it, there's no way I would know who left at what time. And so for myself, I realized like I gave them too much room as an adolescent to make poor choices. And so for myself, I had to reconstruct that so that it wasn't even available to them to make these type of choices.
I like that too. I think oftentimes, like, you and I talk a lot about the kid and how to protect their needs and, you know, kind of soften our approach sometimes, but it doesn't mean we can't be firm, and it doesn't mean we can't set those expectations and expect them to kind of get in there and do what they're supposed to do and take accountability. Because oftentimes we do give that extra little bit because we're trying to make that connection with them, but then also they don't like the loose expectations. Kids need to know exactly what they can do and get away with, because when they go to one class versus the other and they can get away with one thing, it doesn't mean that that class that they get away with everything is the cool teacher. I mean, they might label it as that, but they don't always like that. Those kids like those boundaries. You and I have talked about this before, about our favorite teachers, and we hear about this a lot. It's the teacher who pushed us. It's the teacher who knew us well enough to say, listen, you can't just do nothing, because you're worth something more than that. And I'm going to challenge you more. I mean, my favorite teacher was my worst class, which was geometry. I was terrible at it. It's terrible. Mrs. Croth, though, I loved her. And she was great and personable and had great stories. But I mean, I got in trouble when I talked too much. She called me out and she held me to that. And I'm also careful with that word expectation too, because that can get a little tricky as well, the connotation behind that. But anyway, it's the teachers and the adults who care enough about the kid to not let them be manipulative and say, listen, I know what you're doing. Let's try a different way around that, because it's not working. It's not going to work. And oftentimes, some people that I work with don't like using the word like reputation. But if I know a kid and I know that they really value honesty because they've messed up and they're really trying to be honest, then I'll ask them, like, are you really trying to be honest here? Because it's just not coming off that way. Here's what I'm hearing. Is that what you mean? Sometimes we can put it like that and they're like, no, and I'm sorry. And they'll come clean. And like, I really wanted this, but you know, then we have a conversation about the way you go about it's not right. So I know that's kind of general, but that can apply to a lot of different situations when you present it like that.
Yeah. I messed up with the teacher, Miss Lurch. She was my teacher. She gave me a permanent pass for study hall. And I use that to skip school. Like, she knew something was going on to the point where she called me out on it. And I didn't want to disappoint her. I mean, when that relationship is constructed where, you know, for myself, like I thought of the world of her. And so I didn't want to disappoint, you know, the way that she felt about me. And I wanted to always be the best version of myself. So yeah, I messed up, but she also allowed for that to occur. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I was like, as an administrator, when I go into classrooms, a lot of times when there was disruption or behaviors in that classroom, it was during times of transition when the teacher was doing something else during the class. And then there was a gap of 2, 3, 4 minutes. And that's when, like, if we give that space to that kid, I mean, they are kids, they're not adults. So they're going to fill that time with something. And typically it's not something that's positive.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? Also, when you have so many kids in front of you, when you're teaching, I mean, you can't address every single little thing. So sometimes we ignore some things. And that could work. That could work too.
That could, yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's go back to Lindsay's question. When students do manipulate situations, what strategies do you have to use to still feel like they are supported? So I love that she's going back to still like that support part. And I can't help myself but think like, I also want to support that teacher because it's such a hard job and I don't want them to think that they're getting taken advantage of. So I always try to send that message too. But the question is about how do we support the kid? So again, it's about that conversation we have with them. It's an opportunity to say, listen, I got you. Listen, I'm calling you out on this. Let me help you self-advocate instead. What is it that you actually need? And try to get them to figure out what need is not being met. And what is it that you think you need here? How do you think you could get that in a better way? How could you shift what you ask there that might get it? Because here's what's often going on, especially with teenagers. A lot of people don't believe teenagers. And so they feel like as a response initially to most adults, I find that they just need to lie to, or change it a little bit to just try to get what they want because they're not going to be believed. Like I didn't do my work. And so a lot of people don't believe them when they give a reason. And one of the things I often did, I mean, I did this a lot. I would say, I believe you. And if I had a good relationship with them and I didn't believe them, I wouldn't lie to them. I didn't lie to them. But I would say, you know, something's off here. I usually believe you, but this time something's off. Help me out. But I think what's important, we tell kids that we believe them when we do. Because so many times they feel like they have to be manipulative in order to get around stuff because they're afraid to make mistakes. That's really a lot of times what it is. They're saving face. They're trying not to look bad. You know, I know how I felt. I felt like a failure so many times. I didn't fail well. And a lot of it was around sports and the feedback I got as an athlete. When I was doing really well, boy, did I get a lot of attention and praise. And I felt so important when I did well. But when I didn't, I was devastated. And oh my gosh, imagine that. Like how many times we mess up when we're athletes. So that was really a tough lesson for me. And so I try to, with kids, just say, listen, let's figure out how we can fail in a way to still learn from it and move through it and not feel like we have to be manipulative about what we're getting. So if we're boosting up their confidence, we're giving them skills and language, and the confidence to self-advocate for their needs, that's going to happen a lot less.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think through, like, you know, just the emotions that they're going to feel, the positive emotions. I know, like, for instance, like if they didn't do their homework, obviously they're coming in with a negative. But if you're saying, I trust you, I mean, that's feeding into them and that relationship. So really, that's going to kind of feed into that bank. So like later on, they are going to continue to be honest with you, hopefully, if they understand that you're trusting of them in what they're saying, and they don't have to, you know, throw in some little lies here and there to manipulate the situation for you to trust what they're saying.
Yeah. And sometimes we just need to be completely candid and honest about the situation. So like, I remember having a student, he was a good student, and there was a project and it was a piece of a larger project that he came in and I was like, listen, you all have got to be ready for this. And he wasn't. But guess what? There was a huge game. Like there was a basketball game. It was the finals. It was exciting. And so he made a decision that night when he was going to work on his project. Do I work on my project or do I go to this big game? That's my senior year. I don't want to miss that. In the moment, like he was able to come to me and say, listen, because we had already had that relationship, instead of making up some big excuse, he was straight up with me and just said, I decided to go to the game. I didn't get my work done. Well, there's still a natural consequence to that. However, for him, it was worth it. So I'm not judging that. I'm just like, listen, that's what you made in the decision in your life right there. And in the whole scheme of your life, to be fair, this isn't going to hurt you. This is actually, you're going to create great memories. So just being honest about that. And I do this related to the workforce for me too. Like when I had a job as a, I don't know, I was 23 years old working as a project manager. And I remember I was in Canada at the time, but I was visiting Kentucky and I was supposed to leave Sunday so I could work Monday. But I was with my family. I missed them. I was having a great time. We were having like a campfire. And instead of calling in sick, I called my boss and I said, I'm calling in well because I don't want to lose out on this. And I had that good relationship with them. I didn't have to be manipulative then. So it really does go back to situation, reputation, consistency, patterns, and that relationship with the person that you're talking to. And so when there is a recurring problem, So that could be like a manipulation in the time. But if there's something that keeps coming back and you've done all of those other things, if we want to support the kid, there's probably a skill set that they could benefit from. And one thing I like to use is the CPS approach. And this is the collaborative problem-solving approach. This is based on Dr. Ross Green's model. It's like you engage the student with you to identify the concern that you have and their concern and like what's going on. And that way you can come to a solution. So you can have models like that that you can use that's really simple. Or you could just say, listen, what do you need here? What are you trying to do?
Yeah.
And how can I help you get that?
I think that's the underlying piece there, and having that, like you said, that honest conversation with them and trying to get to the bottom of it. But I love what you were talking about, Charlie, in regards to the fact that they also need to understand, like, this is a skill that you're going to need with your partner in the future, with your children, with your boss. Like, it's going to affect every relationship in the future. And so, you know, constructing it that way to let them know the benefit and why it's wrong, but then also, if you continue with these practices, this is how it's negatively going to affect your future relationships as an adult. And I used to go through that with them all the time, as far as like, this is a pattern of behavior that's toxic, and this is how it's going to be a negative result for you and how it's going to make life difficult. And a lot of times, you know, with our kids and our adolescents, like they don't think about that. They just think about the now,
the
instant gratification or whatever it is that they want. And, you know, what can I do to make that happen without really thinking long term? And so, you know, trying to kind of workshop that with them to make them understand like there is a ripple effect and this is going to impact you not only immediately, but for the long term.
Yeah. And there's a really great book by Dr. Dan Siegel. He's the guy, if you guys don't know, he's the guy who does the flip your lid. He's a neuroscientist. He does amazing, amazing work. And he has a great book. I think it's called Brainstorm, and it's about the teen brain. You need to read it. It's so unique. It is. It's about that. It's like in their head, they're playing out connection and belonging. All of that is just so very important to them. That's why they're making those choices. If they're going to get a connection out of something, they're going to choose that and the belonging piece over anything else in the moment. It's just so important to them. And so we've just got to understand that. And we can help navigate that by giving them the tools and the language. And I always like to go back to the path of possibilities, because we put it back on them when we do this. Well, what do you want? And what don't you want? If you're making this decision, is it leading you to what you want? And we can always lead that back to their values. Do you want to look like you're a kind person, or do you want to look jerky? Yeah. Oh, okay. You don't want to look jerky. They never say they want to look jerky and they want to look kind. Oh, when you said that to me with that tone of voice, or you said that to me, do you think that made you sound kind or kind of jerky? And if you say it just like that, I'm not putting it on them like they are a jerk. I'm not even judging it. I'm just like, what do you want out of this? And so it also helps them get back into their own head and make their own neural connections. Like the way we talk with them and guide them instead of lecture or tell them, it helps them make those neural pathways that will strengthen over time when we give them that time and space without judgment, because they'll keep coming back to us to help them with that.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay, I appreciate the question. And for those who are maybe thinking of more questions based on the conversation today, we have a bit.ly for you. So bit.ly/LOB questions. We'd love to get more information from what's going on in the classroom, on your campuses. So feel free to fill that out for us, and we'll make sure that we answer those questions in future episodes. And then, of course, if you're looking for more information on what Charlie was talking about, I know she's got a ton of resources on her website. So if you go over to thrivingeducator.org, you can find that. Or if you're looking for, you know, some more episodes of this, maybe our services, maybe some additional items, you can go over to joshsandberg.com/languageofbehavior. And then, of course, I'm going to throw up the link for the free webinar that's coming up June 30th that Charlie was talking about at the beginning of the episode. Make sure you click on that link, sign up. Again, it's free. Hopefully everyone takes advantage of that. One last thing, Charlie, I wanted to let folks know, we would love for everyone to just jump on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating and review for the podcast. I know I looked at Apple. We have currently 3 5-star reviews. So thank you for everyone that's going in there and providing those positive ratings for us. But the more, obviously, that we get, the more likely people are able to see that and see that this content is potentially for them. So with that, Charlie, do you want to end with a last thought for episode 25?
Yeah. So Just make sure when you're in a building with a team, make sure everyone is consistent with their messaging. So we need training for that reason. And we need time and space to be able to talk about this so that kids don't learn to play other adults or adults against each other. That's really important.
No, I'm so glad you said that. That's a very big component that we don't really discuss, but part of that manipulation might be with trying to fight against each other to get their way. So I'm glad you said that.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.